This is Phil Rowe,
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm joyful because I've managed to collar the man. It's been some little while trying to get this together. Bob's a very busy man, you know. Bob Jarman from the Cambridge Natural History Society. He is our guest featured this morning. Now, NatHistCam, as we've already mentioned, is a project to study the natural history of Cambridge. The objectives of the study are to create a snapshot of the flora and fauna of Cambridge City and its immediate environs. We've been having a chat. And it's gone to our feathered friends. But we must remember that it's also about the flora and fauna, maybe about the lizards we might have, toads, frogs. Increasing the public awareness of the diversity of plants, animals, birds and fungi in the city. And we have a great divestment of birds, animals, insects, all in Cambridge Mill Road Cemetery. We sometimes go in there just for an oasis of peace and calm, a haven in the sunshine, as we can sit on some of the park benches there. It's a little bit of a gem. A lot of people don't know about Mill Road Cemetery in Cambridge, but it is nurtured and looked after, and it is this big haven for wildlife. They've, as a society, sort of stuck a pin down in there, and they said this is going to be our centre point for doing the Natural History Project. The project started in 2016, continues for 3 years. That means it's going to be finishing next year. Bob Jarman's here this morning to tell us more about it. Bob, good morning.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you. Good morning.
Nice to see you. You've been on the shows before with Susie Thorpe and Julian when he used to do drivers, managed to collar you down before. It's nice to have you here. We'll start with the NatHistCam project first. It's this 8 kilometre square. So that means it's really going out as far as Cherry Hinton to the M11, to the A14 and down as far as Trumpington. Now, that's a big area to cover for us, Bob.
Well, it is a big area. There are a number of experts. I'm really the bird man. One of our objectives is to examine a garden in each of those 64 1-kilometre squares so that we can see what's in it, what's under it, and what's over it. And we're well on the way to completing our target for that. We've got, perhaps there are three notable recent events that have happened that are quite significant. One of them is right in the city centre, and it's a little damselfly called the Willow Emerald. Now, this was first discovered in the UK in 1993, then appeared in Felixstowe in 2009. But suddenly it has taken over and it's expanded. And now in September time, it's one of our commonest damselflies. And this is all probably to do with climate change. And it's unusual because it lays its eggs underneath the bark of willows, and when the eggs hatch out, the nymphs then fall in the water to develop, rather than in most damselflies and dragonflies, the eggs being injected straight into the water. And our main man for that is Duncan Mackay, and he found a very expansive colony right near King's College Bridge along the backs. And a very active colony, and another one in Hobson's Brook at the end of Brooklands Avenue.
So they can lay them, Bob, in flowing water?
Yes, they can, but they don't actually... it's usually fairly still and quiet water, and what they do is that they inject their eggs underneath the willow bark, and then the nymphs emerge and then fall into the water. It's usually still and quiet water, but we think it's probably climate change that's caused this expansion from the continent.
The clue is Felix, though, isn't it? They've come in, therefore, from mainland Europe.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. Yes.
Found, presumably, previously, more into southern Europe, at least southern France.
Well, there's been an expansion northwestwards into the UK, and they're continuing, as far as we know, their expansion into central England.
How big are they, if we take wingspan?
Oh, they're very tiny. They're about as green as this lead here, this electronic lead. They're very distinct.
6 millimetres, that would be.
No, they're probably about 3 or 4 millimetres long. Okay. Damselflies usually arrest with their wings closed. So they're quite difficult to see sometimes, but they're certainly very prominent in September. That's the real month for seeing the Willow Emerald.
And really, they would be round the waterside. They wouldn't, wouldn't stray too much into flat, open, drier ground.
No, well, they might get blown away, but usually it's immediately around the waterside. It's all a matter of survival, egg laying, and perpetuating the species, and expanding their range as well.
There's a common blue damselfly, is that right? With the most gorgeous iridescent blue on the wings.
Oh yes, I'm not an expert. There is one which I can't remember its name, which has black and white wings, and sometimes gets blown into the city centre. I've seen them flying up and pedicuring on a windy day.
You see, you spot things like this, Bob. This is why it's great to have you, because the average resident, like myself, as you do, go down pedicuring. Oh, there's a fly in the air, and you take notice of it, but you are out to look for everything that's beautiful in nature, and you observe these things. It's just fantastic you can bring this to us today.
Well, there's also been another project, which is not just looking, but listening. And what it entails is setting up recording devices in gardens at night and listening for flyover migration at night. And there are two birders in the city that have done this, John Heath in North Cambridge and Simon Gillings in East Chesterton. And they've come across some remarkable overnight migration that we never knew existed before over the city. It includes geese, it includes terns that usually nest on the coast, and most interestingly of all, it includes a bird that we have never yet seen on the ground in Cambridgeshire, which is the ortolan bunting.
We've actually, I had looked this up last night, because you send me some notes beforehand, and I do my ornithological research. We actually have a recording here, Bob, of the ortolan bunting, which I'm just going to play. Now, to me, Bob, that sounds really like a house sparrow.
Yes,
there. It does, really. I thought, you know, could have easily recorded one of those cheeky little birds. But this is the ortolan bunting. And we know that the French have been a little naughty, because ortolan has been very much on the plates of under French cuisine in the past.
Well, it has in the past. I hope that's dying out. Strictly speaking, under the Wildlife and Countryside Act, which covers most of Europe, that should become illegal. And that sort of capture of small birds during migration, especially in places like Cyprus, is now slowly fading out as the authorities get to grips with it. But, you know, it's very difficult to alter these traditional recipes and sometimes these traditional techniques.
But the ortolan bunting is doing quite well at the moment. And so the French are saying, you know, we may actually have a little bit of je ne sais quoi going in our restaurants again, and maybe start serving ortolan on the menu.
Well, I don't believe that, because ortolan buntings are part of our farmyard, are part of our countryside birds, and it's countryside birds, it's farmland birds that are very much under pressure at the moment. But that recording, Phil, is very good, because what John and Simon have managed to do is to capture that very discreet call, and then they play it back the following morning to see what's gone, see what's flown over at night. They can attempt to recognise the call by its sound, but they can translate this into a sonogram, which is a visual impression of the call, and it's a bit like a DNA footprint, a DNA fingerprint, and from that sonogram they can make an exact match with standard sonograms and make a spot-on identification.
That's how they're identified, because to me, as a layman, I heard that, and as I said to the listeners, it just sounded like your average cheeky house sparrow.
I would not be able to pick that
I would not be able to determine that, but they have, and there I know from sort of a reference library of bird song that's where that's come from, that is the ortolan bunting. To actually record these as well, you must be using a very... I've seen these very sophisticated microphones these days that you use to pick the sound up. A sort of parabolic reflector to catch the sound.
Well, there are different levels of this. It depends on how much you want to spend. But yes, indeed, that's the sort of kit that they have. It's extremely sensitive. all of this has yet to be really verified by the birdwatching authorities, but we've long suspected that Ortolan bunting is a nocturnal migrant overland. And what is interesting is that 2 years ago, some listeners in Dorset recorded about 30 or 40 birds passing overland. So the suggestion is that these birds are migrating from their breeding quarters in northern and eastern Europe. And instead of migrating due south to winter in sub-Saharan Africa, they're actually taking an oval route and going southwest rather than due south, and cutting across southern England, and then making a circuitous route down the western seaboard of France, eventually into Africa and sub-Saharan Africa, where they spend the winter.
And do you think they've been doing this for actually quite a long time, Bob, and they've just not been on our bird...
They've not been on our radar,
shall we say. They've actually managed to get away with this over the years, but now, with the modern detection we have and sonograms, and better identification, we've spotted the little critters.
Well, we've suspected this for a while with some large seabirds called skuas. We suspect that they may well follow the northeast southwest trajectory of our main river valleys and do a shortcut from the North Sea into the Bristol Channel, into the Irish Sea, and then into the Atlantic, where they spend their winter period, or our winter period, and then they return the following spring.
It just shows you nature has still got so much to reveal to us. You know, we're finding still new species on the planet, whether it's under our ice sheets, whether it's in Amazonian forests, deep in jungles somewhere. And there are still, well, I don't know whether there's still genuses to certainly we're adding to the various different genus, but they're still out there. Where should we go? We could do a whole program on this, but I rather would like to talk about the tawny owl.
Oh, yes, okay, go ahead.
Now, somebody has... we feel like we're doing Spring Watch now, or Autumn Watch. It feels like doing this today with you. It's fantastic to have you here, Bob. In Thetford Forest, Thetford Chase, we've got some rather really eerie, nice recordings of the tawny owl at night and the call. Now, when I hear that last noise, the woo noise, I always thought that was a barn owl, but it is the tawny's.
Well, as far as I know, that's the call of the female. The female makes the kiwik noise, and it's the male that makes the hooting noise. And it's this time of year that young birds have dispersed from the nest. And what the British Trust for Ornithology in particular want to know, and so do we as part of Nat Hiscam, is where they are in Cambridge. Now, I do know of 5, possibly 6 nesting sites in the north and west of our project area, but we're intrigued to know if they exist in the rest of the city. They're fairly cosmopolitan. Their main diet, believe it or not, is earthworms, as well as small mammals.
We think of them catching mice.
Yes, we do, rodents.
Even the odd, I don't know, they go for frogs?
I'm not sure. I think they'll probably go for anything that moves. But a substantial part of their diet is earthworms in the litter on the forest floor. But yes, they will certainly go for small mammals. But if anybody has heard one or seen one within our project area, get onto our website, send us a message, or even via one of our blogs where we have our email addresses, and please do let us know.
We'll give out the details for the Cambridge Natural History Society. Bob, you can see this as well. Am I on the right one for people
to... Yes, you're on the right one. Yes,
good. It's cnhs.org.uk. So that is as in Cambridge Natural History Society, .org.uk. cnhs.org.uk.
We do have another one, which is quite specific to our project, which is nathiscam.org. I think that's the one, anyway. But if you'll get it if you put most of that in.
And I did actually look at that one and explore that one earlier on. By the powers of radio here, we'll just see if we can get to it as well. Is it going to come? No, perhaps nathiscam.org.
It might even be .uk at the end of that.
Rather than an organisation. We'll get there.
You'll get there if you use
your search engine to find the site. I'm sort of desperately trying to grab it, obviously, before we disappeared, so we can confirm it and get some... I don't know. There we are. Submit a nathiscam, as in the natural history for Cambridge sighting. And we can record things there. Actually, I found, I think, a completely different website, which is CPERC.
Well, that's the...
that's an acronym.
That's the record centre for the... based with the Wildlife Trust of our entire area. We send most of our records to the Centre for Records that you've got up on the website there.
The Cambridgeshire and Peterborough Environmental Records Centre. We'll have to talk about this another time, Bob.
Okay, that's fine, Phil. Yep,
yeah, because we're kind of running out of time. We could go on with it. But the great thing is we can have you back for more.
Okay.
And the great thing is because it's seasonal, we'll enjoy seeing you again. So as we sort of see nature begin to hunker down for winter, maybe next month we can talk about hibernation and some of the other spottings. So we've still got time, haven't we, to get everything in for nathiscam because you have a cut-off date next year. Just finally, when will that be?
I'm not entirely sure. It will be the third anniversary. It will probably be next autumn, but I'm not entirely sure when the cut-off point will be. But it will cover everything, we hope, from fungi to flowering plants, to birds, to insects, as much as our expertise will allow. And of course, mammals and reptiles, which are under pressure at the moment in the city, especially common lizards. So it should include, I hope, everything, and there should be something for everybody to enjoy.
I know the common lizard is next door to us in Mill Road Cemetery, still alive and colony. I know that because I've seen them there.
Good.
So there we have
one
spotting for you. So if you have anything from the natural history point of view that you have spotted around Cambridge, do get in touch with them. It's nathiscam.org.uk. There we are. I found the website for you, nathiscam.org.uk. We'll have more from the project. Bob Jarman will be back with us from the Committee of the Cambridge Natural History Society next month, we hope. We'll have more on the wildlife of Cambridge. Bob, thank you very much for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you, Phil. Thank you.